Hey, Liam Potter here with another episode of Newey Tech People's Community Spotlight. This month, we've got Brock Morley and Steve Jones, who are the president and vice president, respectively, of the UON Innovation and Entrepreneurship Society. They give their take on innovation and entrepreneurship in Newcastle, in the Hunter, what we've been seeing in the past and what we're expecting to see in the future. Good episode from a couple of young guys who are doing some pretty good things already. Okay, so gents, thank you for coming on.
Pleasure, thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Absolutely. So I guess easiest point to start, who are you, what do you do? You know, give us I guess the elevator pitch on you as people.
Sure. Yeah, so my name's Blaze. I'm currently studying a Bachelor of Business at obviously University of Newcastle. And originally I'm from Tamworth, and while this virus is still sort of taking effect, I'm living back there, but which means a lot of travel for me coming down to Newcastle for all my commitments, but no, it's all good and I'm enjoying it.
Excellent.
And yeah.
Steve.
And my name's Stephen Jones. I'm currently a third year student majoring in innovation, entrepreneurship and leadership and management. I do have a background in the automotive industry, but I think like a lot of people have realized is, you know, COVID gave a bit of an opportunity to sort of reevaluate their trajectory and
soul searching.
Yeah, exactly. So I did a bit of soul searching and I realized that I really wanted to make more of a difference and an impact in the innovation space and pursue that further.
Sweet. Okay. Okay. You're both here because you're part of the Innovation Society at the uni. So I guess let's sort of start there. Tell me a bit about the society itself, a bit of the history about it, really what I guess what the idea is behind the society, what you're really trying to achieve.
Yeah, so the society was set up originally to bring together people of not only the business faculty, but everyone around the campus to bring our ideas together, because obviously business people might be able to help run the business, but we need techies and we need engineers to be able to build the products and design and facilitate the growth of the products. So what our aim is to do is just to bring those people together so, you know, to grow innovation in itself.
Sweet. And what roles are you holding within society?
Yeah.
Who's got the big title?
I'm the president. we're all equal in the executive. They're just titles and essentially roles, but we're all in this together. We're all putting the same amount of work in and yeah.
Spoken like a true president.
Classic.
Steve, what's your role?
So, yeah, I'm vice president, you know, but following on, yeah, we do help each other out a fair bit. We're pretty good like that. We've also got our secretary as well, which is Lucas, and we've got our treasurer, which is Jaden. We've also got a director of sponsorships as well, which is Will.
Cool.
But, yeah, we work pretty well together.
Yeah. Lucas, Jaden, Will, they're all three fantastic blokes as well. So, if the society is going to grow this year, we're going to do it with this team.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet. Shout out to the extended team.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So you've both taken pretty, I guess, pretty big or big sounding roles at least within the society. Personally, I'd be terrified to take up any sort of role with a title like president or VP or just anything sort of board level just because it sounds big and scary. So what, I guess at an individual level, what makes you want to put your hand up for something like that?
Yeah. So I like to go and do things and get out there and not hold back on anything. So when this opportunity came up, I took every step forward to go and do it. And I will admit, when I was elected and then the next couple of days, it's like, whoa, okay, now I'm the president. This is a bit of a big deal because I actually have to do well in this, because if I don't, it's going to have effects on people. So yeah, I'm really excited for it, but you know, I think it's going to be done well.
Sweet.
Yeah, and you know, I put my hand up for it, you know, being a student, being a previous member of the society, I was excited with, you know, the workshops and the industry chats that were previously held and focusing on the IE space. I really wanted to sort of be a part of that and help out the society.
You mentioned you're a previous member of the society, so you would have seen sort of the good work that happened in the foundational year. This is sort of a question for both of you, but what are the goals of the society, I guess, at a personal level, but long-term, what do you want the society to be?
So, you know, our goals for the society is to grow it. Currently, it is pretty predominantly around new space, but, you know, we vision it to go further and impact Callaghan, because innovation entrepreneurship isn't just business. It can be applied across cohorts, you know. It plays a part in creative industries, engineering. There's so much engineering going out, and, you know, people want to sort of pursue it into a startup or computer science. You know, there's still that innovation entrepreneurship aspect of that.
Yep.
We vision to sort of go out there, be a bigger part of the Callaghan experience.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. It's probably worth contextualizing for people that maybe haven't studied at UON. The New Space Campus is predominantly business and law. Callaghan used to be sort of the catch-all for everything, but Callaghan's primarily like the medical space and really the engineering and technical part of the university at the moment. So when you say branching into Callaghan, you're talking more about stepping away from a predominantly business targeted, well, not necessarily targeted, but a predominantly business focused society, and trying to target maybe the comp sci students or like the engineering students, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, because innovation, it is cross-platform. Like, it doesn't really matter where it's coming from. But when you've got diversity in innovation as well, that changes a lot of things. Because when it is more diverse and you collaborate, you got better access to ideas. When your ideas are broader, that can change outcomes from anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, same as Steve, grow society and facilitate events where people can come together from both campuses, because it does create a bit of a barrier with us being separated.
There is a bit of fragmentation, for sure.
Yeah, and which if we can have events that bring people together and mean that these opportunities can arise for people, that I think we're doing what we need to do as a society.
For sure. For sure. You talked about events briefly then. I mean, obviously, events are a bit of a weird grey area where we can't host things as best as we would like to. What do events look like in 2020/2021 for INE?
Yeah, so in the next sort of coming 12 months, well, the current executive is in, we hope to run as many events we can next year. Hopefully, by then the restrictions might have been eased a bit. However, for the remainder of the year, what we're trying to do is just provide little networking events, and they'll come out in the next few weeks.
Cool.
And have online things, which we've got partners through I2N and workshops.
Yep.
So that's our main focus while we are restricted a little bit.
For sure.
Yeah.
Sure. The university, I mean, in the past 5 years, a bit longer, has thrown quite a lot of weight into sort of the innovation entrepreneurship space. I mean, the fact that you're doing INE as a major, is it a major or is it a separate bachelor entirely?
Well, no. So there's two ways you can do it. You can do the bachelor's of innovation entrepreneurship, or you can do it as a major.
Cool.
I'm doing it as a major, but yeah.
But you've got the option.
But yeah, you do have the option. Yeah.
Cool. So really throwing heaps of weight behind it, the existence of things like I2N, and really this society, evidence of that.
Yeah.
What does your partnership look like with the university? Obviously, the sort of university and society partnerships haven't always been, you know, the most strong partnerships.
Yeah.
I'd imagine, considering what the university is trying to achieve in this space, there's probably a pretty good partnership happening there. What does that look like for you guys at the moment? What does it look like for you in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the past, I2N have been a place where our society has been able to meet and have events and do all these sort of things. And Richard, who's at the I2N building, he's offered tremendous amounts of support and been an amazing help to us. So that supporting role, and if we can do as much as we can for I2N as well in furthering their projects, I think we're doing the right things by each other, and that's how our partnership is going to prosper.
Cool. It's probably worth mentioning as like a sort of soft plug. Pretty sure the first episode of Community Spotlight was with Richard. So if you haven't watched that one, go and watch it.
Awesome.
Just get that in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything worth adding, or are you just going to kind of echo those sentiments?
Well, yeah, like obviously students, they're part of the ecosystem in that regard. You know, we've got lecturers that appreciate the society as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the partnerships with the I2N, it does give us the access for facilities to use, and even the university supports us with with, you know, spaces as well.
Mm. And I've had, you know, I wasn't like directly involved in boards or anything within the society level. For a lot of societies within the university, it's quite difficult to get off the ground purely from a support perspective. Like being able to survive financially and be a going concern for a while is quite difficult for a lot of societies. So it's probably given you a lot of freedom in that you do have a bit of backing and you don't have to pay for a physical location, that sort of thing. So it's really cool that you have those tools immediately available to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not always the case.
Yeah.
So zooming out a bit more, this is a bit of a broader question. What are your thoughts on really, I guess, the innovation and entrepreneurship ecosystem in the last like decade or so in the Hunter?
Yeah. So I'm originally not from the Hunter, so I sort of got an outside perspective coming in sort of last 6 months and viewing it. And the Hunter Innovation Project, I've done a little bit of research on, and they're doing great things, turning Newcastle into a smart city, not only to be more environmentally friendly, but to be more user friendly to the people who live here.
Mm.
And we've seen that via the tram that's been put in and all these other projects which are happening. And the University of Newcastle is a partner in that initiative. So we hope to do as much as we can to sort of watch that space too.
Cool. And Steve?
Yeah, I think following on from that, I wasn't from here originally, but I've been here for quite some time. And
where were you from?
I'm from Armidale originally. So yeah, I've been pretty lucky to see like the changes happening around Newcastle.
Mm.
You know, and I know there is a lot of initiatives being pushed forward with turning Newcastle into a smart city and installing smart sensors around and pushing sustainability with the, I think it was a 5M solar project.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like Newcastle is looking forward and really trying to make a difference in that sphere of things.
For sure. And that's, I mean, the smart cities project, that's a team within the city of Newcastle that's been around for really sort of 5, 6, 7 years, I think. They've done some super, super impressive work. So
absolutely. Yeah,
I hope that they sort of keep doing that because, like you said, that smart poles project, smart parking, that sort of stuff, it's all really, really, really interesting. It's getting a lot of worldwide recognition.
Mm.
So hopefully we sort of keep going down that path.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously we're doing a lot of good things with respect to fostering innovation within the region. But the reality is there's still a pretty long way to go. Obviously, limited perspective, you know, you're still fairly early in your careers. What do you think the barriers are to innovation within the Hunter?
So, look, I think, you know, in the Hunter region, I think there is a couple of barriers still. I think culturally, like probably on an individual level, we're still pretty risk adverse.
Mm.
Like we are scared to take risks, especially when it comes to new technology or a new product, if it hasn't been tried and tested. Rather than just sort of jump out and try it, we sort of hold back a bit.
Sure.
So that's a bit of a barrier there. And, you know, overcoming that, we need to be more tolerant to risk. And I'm not saying, you know, just try it and see what happens. It's just being calculated with it. So I think from an individual level, it's just sort of changing that perception of failure in a way and actually flipping it and like, well, what can I learn from this? And then another one, I think collaboration. There's a lot of smart people working in a lot of different businesses and not just under one roof. And with collaboration, it gives you access to a greater field of ideas and that helps the innovation process from there as well.
So you're talking more like the knowledge exchange between different organizations, potentially across different industries.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or even the individual, like everyone has ideas. Everyone has spectacular ideas, but not always that those ideas are heard.
Mm.
So I think a barrier is those ideas aren't being heard by other people and the people who actually make the decisions, where I know that sometimes when ideas are made, it's very corporate and it's kept to a box of people, which that's why we have ideation groups and focus groups to build these ideas. So
for sure. So a lot of conversation, I guess, within the innovation and entrepreneurship ecosystem within the Hunter, across really all levels of businesses from startups to corporates, It centers around attraction and retention of talent. Pretty big skill shortage, especially in the technical sector within Newcastle. And really what that's sort of manifested itself into being is that there's a brain drain towards the capital cities like you, Sydney and you, Melbourne, and to a lesser extent, Canberra.
Yeah.
How does Newcastle solve that? How do we get it to a position where there's a positive flow of candidates or a positive flow of talent into Newcastle as opposed to what's currently happening?
Yeah. Well, from my perspective, the first thing that we need to ask ourselves is why are people leaving? Is it to pursue a better lifestyle? Is it to pursue a higher salary, or are there more opportunities down there, or whatever the cause may be? But once we have the reason to why they're going to Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Canberra, we need to then focus on building those here. So if it's lifestyle, we need to improve the lifestyle for them. If it's salary, we may look at that as well, even though that's hard because obviously those corporate companies have a lot more money behind them. But if it's the opportunities, within our community, we need to really look at building those. And yeah, but the first step is identifying why they're leaving and then nailing that. And then not only will that mean that they'll stay here, but we'll attract people from Sydney, attract people from Brisbane and Canberra.
Why do you think they're leaving? And I appreciate limited perspective, limited insight from that sort of industry level, but your gut feel, your sort of first inclination, why do you think people are not staying within Newcastle?
I think that those bigger cities have a prestige lifestyle about them. And I know that a lot of people I know move to these cities because they want to have that lifestyle and have that experience of living in a city. And well, I'm from Tamworth originally, and that's sort of the reason why most teenagers move away from Tamworth.
Yes.
And I'm not sure about Newcastle specifically. However, if it's the same train of thought, I would dare say it's lifestyle focus, if not possibly salary.
Yep, yep. What's the innovation ecosystem like in Tamworth?
Well, speaking about like poaching talent and stuff, Newcastle poaches all the Tamworth talent.
Yeah. So it's sort of little fish, bigger fish, shark.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So it's not the worst. There's a initiative in Tamworth at the moment where they're preparing Tamworth to grow to 100,000 people from 60,000. Okay. So that the aim is by 2030 that they are prepared for that 100,000 people. Mm. And, you know, with COVID, it might change things up a bit. But there's a lot of innovation happening out there. And obviously, it does mean we need talented people within every community so that every community is growing.
Awesome. Anything to add, Steve? What do you think of barriers to innovation in Newcastle?
Well, I think Newcastle's actually doing a pretty good job. Like recently, population is growing, and I think we are actually starting to attract a lot of talent into Newcastle. A lot of people are attracted to the lifestyle that they get here. You know, like it's fantastic. If you want a coffee, you get a coffee, and then you want to go for a swim, you got the beach. Mm. And I think geographically, the location's fantastic too. Like, you know, obviously, there is a bit of a brain drain of people working in Sydney and, you know, the knowledge is going there. But conversely, like with house prices, people are realizing that and they want to come to Newcastle, have a better lifestyle, you know, won't get stuck in traffic and then they can still commute to work and do look around Newcastle, especially with the innovation side of things with, you know, as previously mentioned, the smart cities. And Newcastle University working on Innovation Hub at Honeysuckle.
Mm.
And that's attracting talent as well. And I think that'll go straight into our local area, our regional area. Mm. So I think adding the knowledge that's getting attracted to the uni, plus the lifestyle perks, plus the future vision that Newcastle's, you know, aiming for, I think over time, like, people really recognize the potential here. And even in saying that, you know, there's, speaking of change in the area, there's startup incubators popping up, you know, there's a lot of shared workspaces. We're in one now. So, you know, and like a lot of collaboration in that regard. And I know a lot of people with COVID, they actually used to commute from Sydney for work and now they're actually living here.
Yeah.
And working from home in Sydney, you know, into Sydney.
Yes.
And it goes both ways because a lot of people are probably living in Sydney, but now remotely working for Newcastle firms.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're starting to see a bit more of that for sure. I think if we look at really the effects of the coronavirus in the way we work. Obviously, the big thing is the work from home push that's just kind of been forced on everyone. It's funny how work from home is very difficult until it starts impacting profitability, but I digress. Essentially, we're in a position where it's no longer a requirement to physically go to the Sydney CBD. It's no longer a necessity to either live there or make that train trip. And I did that train trip for a while. There's plenty of people on it. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of people making that trip. And I dare say if you offered them the ability to stop commuting 3.5 hours each way, they would probably take it. So we've been given a pretty unique opportunity in that a lot of these smart people that realistically couldn't find opportunities within Newcastle, they can still live in Newcastle and operate efficiently within Newcastle. But yeah, when it's all said and done, they live here, they spend their money here, they invest time here. If they're going to start a company, they're going to start it here, that sort of thing. And I think that's really important for the region because realistically, we're never going to have the volume of opportunity when compared to Sydney. Just the population differential means that that's never really going to happen. But if we can provide quality frameworks for people to succeed in, you know, generating an idea and really going through with that idea and actually building something pretty impressive, if they can do that here as opposed to traveling to Sydney, I think that's a pretty big win.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And we've seen through this pandemic that software such as Zoom, we don't actually have to be living in a specific spot to be a part of a team that's growing. Of course, face-to-face contact is always the best. However, I could have someone living in Perth and I could still have a meeting and build a project with them living thousands of Ks apart.
For sure. So you're both fairly early in your careers. You're both sort of, you're at the stage where you're figuring out kind of the direction that you're going to take in the next 20 to 30 years. No one has a 30-year plan built out. And if they do, they never actually follow it. I'm not going to hold you to this, but what do you think the future holds for you both?
Yeah. So, of course, I don't know where I'll be in 30 years' time. Accidents happen. Things happen, life happens. I might not even be here, but if I am still here, well, I hope I am, I hope to be able to look back and say I've had a positive impact on the community and have influenced people for the better. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm really passionate about, and whether that be in the innovation sector or whatever pathway in life I do, mm-hmm. that I want to be able to say that I've made a positive impact on people's lives.
Sure.
You know, well, I'm in my sort of second career now, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
Hit the reset button.
Yeah, I've hit the reset button. But, you know, one thing that I've noticed, we can have this, you know, 20, 30-year strategy, and all it took was like one sort of black swan event to just absolutely flip it.
Mm.
And moving forward, one thing that I sort of, you know, what I'm attempting to achieve is just constantly grow and learn. You know, like the more knowledge and the more knowledge you get, you know, you're better off for it. Become more adaptable. And 20, 30 years, you know, I want to make a difference as well. Like, yep. I'm not driven to succeed in like financial leaps and bounds or anything like that. Mm. I just want to be involved with technology sort of based projects that have actually made like contributions and seem to be benefit.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, I mean, generally speaking, it sounds like you're not particularly tied to a career in particular. You're not particularly tied to a location necessarily, but you're tied to the idea of fostering essentially a positive impact in whatever community you end up being a part of. Does the hunter provide sufficient skills, tools, really a framework for you to achieve that, well, in your opinion anyway?
Yeah, look, I definitely see Newcastle to be somewhere that really harbors those sort of projects. As previously mentioned, with the growth of the region, that just opens up opportunities.
For sure.
And I absolutely love Newcastle. And I you know, with all these developments, it's definitely giving me the tools that, well, I foresee it giving me the tools to propel my career in that regard.
Mm.
We're in the fourth industrial revolution, you know, and it's focused on tech, predominantly AI, robotics and all that sort of stuff. And we've got the geographic location to support all that anyway. Mm. Like, I don't see Newcastle to be like a bit of a flag of, no, that won't happen here. We've got pretty well all the ingredients.
Yeah.
From my lens anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything to add?
Yeah. So the Hunter, of course, provides lots of innovation opportunities, and the startup of hubs and shared spaces, it really allows the young entrepreneurs or any entrepreneurs to facilitate and put their ideas forward. For sure. And the start of the Honeysuckle campus and the growth of that is going to further develop that. And what the Hunter provides is cheaper living opportunities, so you don't have to have money to go forward and implement your idea, but rather you can be in a place where it's cheap to live and put more and more of your time and effort into your idea. Yeah.
At a really sort of basic level, because I mean the cost of living here is obviously heaps cheaper than Sydney.
Yeah.
But just generally speaking, we have pretty good, I guess, pretty good infrastructure when we talk about internet and when we talk about access to manufacturing, rapid prototyping. We have organizations like New Ventures and Design Anthology that exists out here where you can rapidly ideate a product and sort of get to that MVP level. Yeah, I get what you're sort of saying in that the size, it's obviously, it's a factor, but it's not necessarily a barrier.
Yeah.
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 Excellent.
Yeah. So coming from Tamworth, Newcastle's obviously heaps bigger, and I see nothing but opportunity here with this, everything else that is lined up. Like back in Tamworth, even though that they're progressing, Newcastle still is years and years ahead. So
yeah.
I think that there's not many excuses on why we shouldn't be growing. And if we have ideas, why we shouldn't be doing it. Because Steve and I were talking the other day that there's so many free softwares out there for people who want to start a business or want to have an idea, want to pursue it. Mm-hmm. And obviously Newcastle's growing in that sector. So it's a great place to be if you want to have a startup.
Mm. Yeah. And we very much, we're fortunate enough to be in a position where we do have the sort of support networking built from places such as the council, the uni, a few of the bigger corporates. They do actually invest time, effort, money into facilitating that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a better supported ecosystem than it would have been a decade ago.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that you bring up sort of the relativity of it all, in that Newcastle seems to compare itself to Sydney every day. Yeah. Every conversation that I've had with anyone on this topic around sort of growing Newcastle's tech, innovation, entrepreneurship, whatever want to label you want to affix to it. But growing that community, growing that ecosystem, it's always been, how do we compete with Sydney? So to get the perspective of someone coming from Tamworth, where, I mean, you're not as far along in the continuum of building that ecosystem, it's good to hear that we're at least sort of, we've made progress, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So zooming out a bit from the Hunter and sort of zooming out from the regional topic that we've covered pretty handily until now, as far as getting an idea off the ground and really sort of cutting through the competition, what do you think it takes to get an idea sort of past that embryonic stage where it is really just a seed?
Yeah. So I think that in our society, everything is based on popularity, and obviously ideas that go off and become big are what people are shown the most of repeatedly. So I watched a Shark Tank last night, and it was about this guy who started a business selling carve-out coconut bowls. And at the time when he was on Shark Tank, he had a 1.2 million turnover in the past 12 months. And
what?
Yeah, crazy. And he just did that by building a community on social media.
Yeah.
And obviously, because that's building his popularity around that, he grew. So I'm a big believer in popularity is what is the biggest driver of ideas.
Yeah, almost sort of identifying that a market exists and getting to, I guess, that tipping point where people start to actually put money behind the product is sort of the big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Okay. Anything to add, Steve?
Yeah, yeah. So getting your idea past the embryonic stage, it comes down to a couple of things. And that's making sure that you're actually solving the right problem. A lot of people have plenty of ideas. You know, we can sit in this room for about 30 minutes, would have so many ideas.
Hmm.
Maybe they won't be solving the right problem. But then even then, you know, we do have a lot of ideas, but a lot of them we don't put into action.
Hmm.
And I think you need to put those ideas into action And, you know, once they start going into the action and you've got a bit of a track record actually trying to achieve something, it does develop past the embryonic stage and then it gains that recognition and then that traction.
For sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Excellent.
Just providing value for people.
Yeah.
What do you think the big growth fields, so I guess the big growth industries are going to be in our lifetimes? And I guess sort of conversely, is there anything that you think has been touted as the next big thing that maybe isn't going to be as big as everyone's saying?
As I previously mentioned, you know, fourth industrial revolution, you know, the future is pretty well here. Like it's accelerated. Mm. It's here with us now, you know, like the push for AI and the robotics industry is starting to boom and all that sort of thing. Like those industries aren't going anywhere and they're going to be quite strong for quite some time.
Mm.
And talking about consumer electronics, you know, like you've got augmented reality, which is slowly making its way into the mainstream, and wearables, they're absolutely, everyone's got an Apple Watch now. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I remember a couple of years ago, they weren't really such a thing.
Mm.
And now they've really rocketed. And things that I think that may not actually go according to plan, I'm not an expert in the field or anything like that, but from my automotive background, there's still a lot of research development into hydrogen vehicles.
Yep.
You know, that's still getting a lot of traction with the likes of, say, Toyota and stuff like that. But comparing that to electric vehicles now, the infrastructure is really getting rolled out everywhere compared to, say, hydrogen vehicles. You know, the battery technology is absolutely increasing anyway, which sort of does solve the problem with range anxiety with the hydrogen. So, you know, it's whether it ends up going into the automotive industry the way they plan, I'm not too sure, but the technology is valuable regardless.
For sure.
Whether it's not used in automotive but used in manufacturing or something.
Yeah. Any sort of alternative application or any sort of alternative method of power, the automotive industry is obviously going to be a pretty large component of that, especially at a consumer level. But, you know, you've got sectors like mining, shipping, that sort of thing, where there is massive potential for really the phasing out, I guess, of fossil fuels. We're a long way before we're going to be able to phase out bunker fuel for an oil tanker or something like that. But that sort of approach is definitely something worth exploring in the future.
Yeah.
Blaze,
yeah.
What are your thoughts? Give us your speculative.
Yeah. So a big thing that I'm passionate about is the financial sector and the way that we pay, because obviously that's changed dramatically, even though over the past few years, I pay for everything through my phone.
Yep.
And, you know, gone are the days where we pay with cash, let alone a card. Mm. Everything's moving to, you know, you can pay with your watch now. So I was talking about wearables.
Yeah.
So I think that financial way of how we pay is growing and diversifying, like Afterpay. We use Afterpay for things. So that's just one thing I'm really passionate about. And in the way of something, I don't really have anything that I'm like not for. So
you're an eternal optimist.
Yeah. Eternal optimist.
Sweet. So where can people find out as to what the society is doing?
Yeah, so a big one at the moment is our socials. So LinkedIn is just Innovation and Entrepreneurship Society.
Yep.
And
we'll chuck the link in the description, show notes, all that gear.
Perfect. Sorry. And Facebook, Instagram.
Yep.
And yeah, all our handles will be on there too.
Awesome. And you guys personally, if anyone wants to reach out, if anyone has any questions about the society or really what you're doing personally, where do they find you?
Yep. So you can find me on LinkedIn, just Brock in brackets Blaze Morley. And you can also email my president, email at president@iesociety.com.au.
Sweet.
And likewise with Steve, vice president.
Yeah. Yep. Obviously email me vicepresident@iesociety.com.au or find me on LinkedIn, which we'll plug because I've got a very common name. So it's hard to find me on LinkedIn. Yeah.
We're definitely going to have to throw that one in there in the bottom. That's all good. That's fine. All right. Excellent. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
No worries. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Community Spotlight. If you want to learn a bit more about what we do, by all means, check us out on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, pretty much any of them. If you want to learn more about what the Innovation and Entrepreneurship Society is up to, be sure to check out their pages. Be sure to check out their website as well.